From NPR and WBEZ Chicago, this is Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, the NPR News Quiz. I'm Carl Castle, and here's your host at the Paris Casino in Las Vegas, Nevada, Peter Sagal.
Thank you, Carl. Thank you, everybody. Thank you so much. It is absolutely great to be here in the Las Vegas Strip. Wayne Newton, Mr. Las Vegas, will be here later to play our game. In the flesh. Pretty exciting. But first, you might have heard this. Roger Ailes, head of Fox News Channel, said in an interview that NPR is run by people who are, quote, Nazis. He said that. Specifically, quote, the left wing of Nazism. So people were upset by this. Mainly, of course, Nazis. Speaking from hell, Adolf Hitler said, quote, I devote my life to becoming history's greatest monster, and for that I get compared to a bunch of hippies obsessed with cranberry relish? Help us advance our nefarious plans for world domination by giving us a call. The number is 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. That's 1-888-924-8924. Hi, you're on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hi, it's Chad from Victoria, British Columbia.
Hey, how are things in Victoria?
Very, very windy and rainy.
I'm told it's beautiful there. I've never been.
It is beautiful. There's a lot of greenery all year round.
And by greenery, I assume you mean...
In more ways than one.
I understand.
Ah, there we go.
Well, welcome to the show, Chad. Let me introduce you to our panel this week. First, a contributor to CBS Sunday Morning, Ms. Faith Saley.
Hello, Chad.
Hi, Faith.
Next, a writer for HBO's Real Time with Bill Maher, Mr. Adam Felber is here.
Howdy, Chad.
Hi, Adam.
And lastly, a comedian performing at the Hemmons Cultural Center in Elgin, Illinois on December 3rd, it's Paula Poundstone.
Hey, Chad.
Hi, Paula.
So welcome to the show, Chad. You're going to start us off with Who's Carl this time. Carl Castle right here is going to read you three quotes from this week's news. If you can correctly identify or explain just two of them, you'll win our prize, Carl's voice, on your home answering device. Ready to go?
Sounds good.
Let's do it. Here's your first quote.
If you touch my junk, I'm going to have you arrested.
Let's get to the quote now, Carl.
All right, that was a man named John Tyner, and he has become the face of a new grassroots protest amongst air travelers against what?
Those full-body scanners.
Exactly. Also, the pat-downs that go with them.
He's become the crotch,
he
I
has.
Think, more than the face.
Yes, he has. He has become the veritable crotch of this new movement.
I had, in LAX where we fly out of, they have the full body scanners.
They do.
And it is creepy. The lady that was, the person that was doing mine asked me to moan, and I I was uncomfortable with it. I thought it was part of the...
Yeah, it's not.
It's here, patriotic.
Here's an interesting detail, though, and Paula and I travel together, so I discovered something, that if you submit to the scanner, they won't give you the pat-down.
Were you disappointed?
Yeah.
Yes, to Adam's disappointment.
I asked for both, and I got I mistakenly went through the scanner first.
I don't... What is the big objection to these see-through scanners? I don't get it. People know what you look like in clothes. I mean, it's not showing... Someone explain this to me. Is it people being modest? If you're fat, we can tell you're fat in clothes.
Oh, I'll tell you, one of the problems is that I think that if the TSA gets to see naked pictures of you, then other places are going to start claiming that it's not safe there. Like, for example, 7-Eleven employees are going to start to say, how do we know for sure that she doesn't have a bomb? We need naked scanners.
I think that they are completely underestimating the vanity of Americans. I think they should take a cue from theme parks and set up a booth on the other side of security. So by the time you get through, they've got all the pictures displayed. you find your own fuzzy junk. You pay $20 for a framed copy. Bingo, you got your first souvenir of the trip right there.
You guys got the see-through scanners in L.A. on the way here. Did you get it in Chicago?
No, we didn't have that in Chicago.
I didn't get it in New York.
I had it in Omaha.
Oh.
Yeah. Oh, no, but in Chicago, which is a very artsy community, they just sketch you naked.
Yeah. Yes.
As they imagine you would look.
That's exactly right.
Very Picasso. All right, Chad, here is your next quote.
Unattractive men come here, and suddenly they have women who are interested in them.
That was Politico editor Jim Vandehei describing all the dangerous temptations for incoming freshmen arriving where?
Capitol Hill.
Yes, exactly right. The orientation for freshman members of Congress is nothing like a college freshman orientation. One is a 2-week-long bacchanal of people finally free to drink and have sex for the first time. The other takes place at a college. The breakout star of the session this time around was conservative Republican Andy Harris of Maryland. He got elected campaigning against Obama's health care plan. Then this week he surprised his fellow congressman when he stood up and complained about the month it will take for his government health care plan to kick in. Quote, why does it have to take so long? And what am I going to do without 28 days of health care? Apparently he was worried what might happen if he couldn't get his prescription anti-irony drugs. He wasn't done, though. He asked a follow-up question. Quote, can I purchase? It's true. He said, quote, can I purchase insurance from the government to cover the gap? Yes.
Now you can.
He invented the public option.
Who coaches them? I mean, who does the introductory, you know?
Yeah, who's like the Rush chairman?
Yeah, it's like that. I believe it's not so much other... They're spoken to by other members of Congress, but there's a lot of sort of administrators, people who tell them how to operate their voting machines and that sort of thing.
Yeah, plus, in the dorms, there's somebody.
Yeah. There's got to be. There's an RA.
There's an RA.
There's an RA,
yeah.
Yeah, I mean, who trains them to betray the principles they came to Washington with?
All right, very good. Here is your last quote.
I'm thrilled, obviously. They have been practicing long enough.
That was Prince Charles of Britain expressing his happiness at his son's big announcement. What?
That Prince William is getting married.
That's right. Very good. Prince William, heir to the throne of Britain, formerly known as William Arthur Philip Louis Windsor, informally known as not the one who dressed up as a Nazi, finally announced his engagement to his longtime girlfriend, Kate Middleton, much to the relief of Prince Charles, as you heard.
Fans, yeah, that was a little snippy of him, too, wasn't it? They've been practicing long enough. Yeah, he's been practicing to be king long enough.
Yeah, I know.
Is that...
Well, I'm sure he feels that way. Yeah. That's all I'm saying.
Fans of royal weddings, though, were bound to be disappointed this time around. Britain is out of money in the midst of huge budget cutbacks. Many Brits are upset about spending taxpayer money on this, so the royal family has announced they're doing it on a budget. Instead of Westminster Abbey, they'll do it at the Westminster VFW. Instead of the Archbishop of Canterbury presiding, it'll be Archbishop of CanterburyOnlineChurch.com.
The thing is, they say they're not going to get married until this summer.
Yes.
And wall-to-wall news, every single night, it's on location. The insider is on location in London, and every single night they're discussing whether who's going to be your designer and whether it's going to be a mermaid dress or an Ampere waist. And
wait,
how long can this go on? It's November.
She will be dressed as a mermaid?
Oh, Peter, you're so straight.
Isn't
it's a mermaid dress. It's a style of a wedding dress.
What is an Ampere waist? Because I think if she's Ampere, he shouldn't marry her. I mean, to me, that's a turnoff. That, to me, is a red flag.
Yeah, I think so. Carl, how did Chad do in our quiz?
Peter, Chad had 3 correct answers, so Chad, you win our prize.
Well done. Chad, thanks so much for playing.
Thank you.
Right now, panel, it's time for you to answer some questions about this week's news. Paula, German scientists have diagnosed a new mental condition, which they say causes people to do what?
I don't have any idea, so if you were to give me some sort of guidance that could point me in the right direction.
Maybe someone knocked on your head too hard. Maybe you walked into a bar. You walked into a bar.
There's a mental condition that makes you tell jokes?
That makes you tell bad jokes.
Oh.
Oh, I hope I don't get that. Oh, that would be awful.
I was thinking, wow, what a useful excuse. I don't know what...
What's it called?
It's called... Yeah. It's the Germans discovered it, so they gave it a good name. Leave it to the Germans to classify humor as a disease. It's called Wieselsucht.
Wieselsucht.
Oh,
you have the Wieselsucht.
You have the Wieselsucht.
Oh, jeez. Wouldn't it be the worst to be like the poster child for Wieselsucht?
Yes.
The only good thing about it would be every time a joke died, I could go, won't you give? the Wieselsucht.
What it is a brain dysfunction of the right frontal lobe that causes a person to, quote, tell inappropriate or poor jokes.
I think my dad has Wieselsucht when he...
I think everybody's dad has Wieselsucht.
When he flirts, when we go to a restaurant, I think that's the only time it sets into his right frontal lobe. When he does the, you know, I'll have the tartare, but make sure you cook it, and... How fresh is your du jour for the soup du jour? It's just awful.
Yeah.
Wow. Is there a cure, is what
I'm
saying.
Well, no, there's no cure, but some of the patients go on to lead productive lives, for example, as the hosts of Car Talk. They,
I started a joke, which started the whole world.
Thanks, Carl. Right now, it is time for the Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me Bluff the Listener game. Call 1-888-WAIT-WAIT to play our game in the air. Hi, you're in Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hi, this is Matthew McGraw from Lathrop, California.
Where's Lathrop?
Lathrop is in the Central Valley, about an hour east of the San Francisco Bay Area and about an hour south of Sacramento.
Oh, what do you do there?
I am a full-time stay-at-home dad of a beautiful, almost 3-month-old baby girl.
Oh, wow. How are you?
Man, that's nice.
How are you enjoying the stay-at-home dad life?
Oh, it's great. Yeah, I can't get enough.
Oh, you will, my friend. Matt, it's nice to have you with us. You're going to play the game in which you must try to tell truth from fiction. Carl, what is Matt's topic?
Okay, Oprah, I'll start living my best life next week.
You want to change your life, but that couch is so comfy. Well, this week we read about someone finding inspiration in an unlikely place. Our panelists are going to tell you 3 stories about people finally getting motivated to make a change. Choose the true story, you'll win Carl's voice on your home answering machine. Ready to play?
I'm ready.
First, let's hear from Faith Saley.
Ask any dog owner the best part about having a pet, and the invariable answer is unconditional love. But according to veterinarian Rita Nettler, even your pooch has deal breakers, like your stinky, stanky breath. Turns out you can only be a dog whisperer if your dog can stand to smell your whispers, which is why Dr. Nettler encourages her clients to quit smoking if they want to receive doggy kisses. Like Bill Tuckman, whose 2 great loves were his border collie Noe and his pack-a-day habit. One of those had to go. Tuckman says, "In the morning, Noe couldn't keep her paws off of me, but by the end of the day, all I got was her tail. I could tell she was judging me." Dr. Nettler, who claims her practice involves listening to animals, learned from Noe that her owner's cigarette breath was a huge turnoff. You might think it's strange that an animal known for sniffing butts is offended by the smell of butts. Yet Dr. Nettler says dogs have a natural aversion to the odor of burnt tobacco. Remember, dogs are people too, she declares, and they want to be smoke and smoke breath free. Tuckman quit cold turkey, no ifs, ands, or cigarette butts. The day Noe peed on my Marlboros, says Tuckman, was the day I got the message.
A man whose breath was so bad, even his dog couldn't stand it, and thus he quit smoking. Your next story of unlikely inspiration comes from Adam Felber.
Bob Muse found his exercise muse while cruising his own neighborhood of Longwell Green, England, on Google Maps. Using the virtual tour known as Street View, Bob was checking out his town when he saw a familiar-looking landmark, gigantic, gray, imposing. It took some time before Bob finally realized that the great hulking obelisk in question was himself. It turned out that just like the Great Wall of China is visible from space, the Great Mound of Bob was visible on the Googles. I'd been thinking of losing some weight for some time, but when I saw that picture, I knew I had to do something, said Bob, whose 300-pound public appearance motivated him to begin a regimen of diet and exercise that has resulted in the loss of about a third of that weight. But not to worry. Those extra 100 pounds will forever haunt the internet version of Longwell Green, part of the monument I like to think of as Bob Henge.
A man catches a glimpse of himself on Google Maps. You decide something must be done. Your last story of self-improvement comes from Paula Poundstone.
Even Santa Claus has sworn off sweets for the holidays. Steve Renforth was delighted to be selected as Santa Claus for this year's Macy's Thanksgiving Day Parade. Delighted until rehearsals began and his weight disabled the hydraulic lift that made Santa's sleigh fly. I had always thought of myself as plump, you know, jolly, says Renforth, but this has been a wake-up call. I hooked up with a fitness guy the day after this happened, and he says he thinks he can have me flying safely by Thanksgiving Day. I mean, I really got it. I am so lucky this happened during the rehearsal. Can you imagine the headlines if it happened at Showtime? 8 tiny reindeer, no match for Santa's girth? Patricia Della Piana, the parade's executive producer, denies that they considered firing Renforth or charging him for the tangled mess he made of Santa's sleigh when it crashed under the strain of lifting him. It wasn't as bad as people are making it out to be, says Della Piana. Steve is doing a great job. He's a fantastic Santa. Yes, the metal and the fiberglass sleigh were crushed, and Rudolph made a grunting noise, but it ended there. No elves were injured, and Mrs. Claus was only in the hospital for 2 days due to complications. Any scarring will be temporary.
All right, here are your choices, Matt.
Oh, wow.
From Faith Saley, a man giving up smoking because even his dog couldn't stand his breath. From Adam Felber, a man catching a glimpse of himself on Google Maps and realizing he needed to lose some weight. Or from Paula Poundstone, as Santa in the Macy's Thanksgiving Day Parade, deciding to lose some weight because the hydraulic lift couldn't. Which of these is the real story of sudden inspiration for self-improvement?
Oh, well. I think I'm going to have to go with Adam and Bob Henge.
Adam's story of Bob Henge?
Yes.
The enormous man, so big he could see himself on Google Maps?
Yeah, that's the one.
All right. Well, that is your choice then. Adam's story, well, we spoke to someone who was intimately familiar with this story.
Millions of people around the world use Street View to find out where they want to go on vacation, to check out a new neighborhood, but this is the first time that we've ever heard that anyone has used it as a dieting technique.
There you are. Ladies and gentlemen, that was Michael Harvey of Google UK. Congratulations, Matt. You got it right.
Thank you.
You earned a point for Adam Felber. You've won our prize. Carl
Thank
Castle's
you.
Voice on your home answering machine. Well done, sir.
Thank you very much.
That's really impressive. Thank you so much for playing.
Thanks.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
And now the game where we invite on big stars and ask them little questions. When we think of Las Vegas, we immediately think of three things. One will bankrupt you, one will get you arrested, but the third is Wayne Newton. He has performed tens of thousands of shows here and around the world. Wayne Newton, Mr. Las Vegas, welcome to Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Thank you. Thank you.
So, not the first time you've been on a Las Vegas stage.
No, as a matter of fact, I've been on most of the stages, and frankly, when they started to implode the hotels, you know, I was really upset when they imploded the Sands.
Right, now this is one of the old casinos.
Yeah, because I was on stage at the time.
Really? So you really brought the house down. Did you... So when did you first play Vegas?
I played Vegas at the age of... 16 years old, in 1959.
Wow.
At the Fremont Hotel downtown, six shows a night, six nights a week.
You were still in school, I remember.
Well, not really. By the time I got here is when I started school.
Yeah. So tell me, I mean, you are the quintessential Las Vegas entertainer. Can you define that term? What is a Las Vegas entertainer? Is there a style to it? Is there?
I think there is. I think there's a style of performing that. By virtue of doing it every night, you either get it right or you have a heart attack or they shoot you. It's one or the other.
Right.
And so,
do you get to pick?
No.
At the end of every show.
No, you really don't get to pick.
Did you, because I know some entertainers in town like get this sort of cultish following. People who devote themselves just to that performer. That ever happened to you?
What's wrong with that?
Nothing. I've been looking for it my whole life. It hasn't worked out yet.
You know, did you have a name for your fans, like the Waynettes?
As a matter of fact, they call themselves Wainiacs.
Wainiacs.
Oh, that's good.
There we go. So you were here during the great old Ocean's 11 days with the Rat Pack and Frank and those guys and Dino. And you've also, you know, survived into the new Vegas with the huge casinos and the theme casinos and the corporations running the town. Which do you prefer?
I actually prefer the older days. I think Las Vegas. Well, Las Vegas was more personal in those days. There was a camaraderie among performers like Frank and Dean and Sam and Elvis and Bobby Darin and on and on and on that really doesn't exist anymore.
Was it weird being so young? Because you were a teenager, as you said, when you started in Vegas. Was it odd being a kid hanging out here?
I didn't know. I mean, the truth of the matter is I came here, I got hit with six shows a night, six nights a week, and that's about all you have energy for.
You started performing, I had no idea this was true, at the age of six?
Actually, I started at four,
and I got
paid at six.
You got paid at six?
Yeah.
So from four to six were your amateur days.
Great.
Just doing it for the love of it. At six, it became all about the money.
5 years old, he's just doing three shows a week.
Yeah. Okay, you're known, your signature song, Danke Shane. How did that come to be your song, the Wayne Newton song?
The song was meant for Bobby Darin to record.
Yeah.
And Bobby had seen me on the Jackie Gleason show, which was my first national television show, in 1963. Came in to the Copa Lounge where I was appearing, and he said, "Are you recording?" I said, "No, sir, I'm not." And he said, "You are now." And Bobby had received Danke Shane for him to follow Mac the Knife with.
Yeah.
And he said, "I want you to have this song." And he had an acetate record of it, a demonstration record, which you would play at 33 and a third, for those of you who remember those days. And Bobby said, "I'm going to show you how this will sound now when you record it," because the acetate had been sung by a German baritone singer. So he sped it up to 78 RPMs, and that's exactly how I sounded. No.
Okay, so tell us about your house, which has been in the news lately. You have a beautiful spread here in Vegas that's called Casa de Shenandoah. Do I get that right?
Yes, that's correct.
And tell us about what that place is like.
It's about 50 acres. We have Arabian horses. We have penguins. We have wallabies. We have all kinds of birds, swans.
I'm sorry, ducks. I stopped listening when you said penguins. You have penguins?
Oh, yes.
How do they like the climate?
They love it.
They do?
Really?
Yeah, they're from South Africa. Uh-huh. And most people don't realize, and I know this is probably not the forum, but of the 52 species of penguins in the world, there are only three species that are Arctic penguins.
It's a stereotype.
That's right. All the others come from South America, they come from the Galapagos Islands, they come from Chile. They cannot take cold weather.
Really?
This is so awkward, because whenever I have penguins over, I crank up the air conditioning.
Sorry, let's give you this. You said you
I feel like I was being so insulting.
But that's why they die on you.
So you have... you have,
or close by,
I
anyway.
Thought it was my cooking, but yeah.
You have a menagerie. You have Arabian horses, you have penguins, you have wallabies.
We do.
What else?
African crown cranes.
Sure.
Horses, dogs, cats, chickens. We have chickens that have been thrown over the fence.
Yeah. And so you have this huge, and you have this place.
Your dogs must feel so inferior.
Well,
like they're the best pet in anybody else's house, and then this dog is looking at it, going, "Oh, there's a crested thing over there," and I'm just.
I was thinking the chickens couldn't feel that good with the African crested cranes and the penguins. The chickens are just totally depressed, just pluck, 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 pluck.
Now, you could speak plainer than that. Come
on.
Donka cluck, donka cluck.
Well, Wayne Newton, we are delighted to have you with us. We have asked you here to play a game entitled...
Hey, wait a minute. You don't have a delicious fig filling.
Point is, you may be the most famous Newton, but you're not the only one. We're going to ask you three questions about other Newtons. If you get two right, you'll win our prize on our show. Carl's voice on their home answering machine. Carl, who is legendary entertainer Wayne Newton playing for?
Wayne Newton is playing for Rebecca Bendel of Las Vegas.
First question. There you go. Let's start right in with the Fig Newton. In the mid-70s, Nabisco tried to market the cookie how? A, creating a dance craze called the Big Fig Newton. B, starting a beauty contest, Ms. Fig USA. Or C, rolling out a new ad campaign with the slogan, why not just stuff it?
It was absolutely Big Fig.
The Big Fig Newton. Yes. You're right. You remember that? I remember that.
I remember that.
You have the...
It was a good guess, though, huh?
Yeah. Very good guess.
It was a very good guess.
It was a skilled guess.
All right, that was good. That was good, Wayne, but here we go. Your next Newton is the Apple Newton. It was one of Apple's only failures back in the 90s. It was a precursor to, like, the Palm Pilot, a personal digital assistant. People remember its handwriting recognition software, which never seemed to work. But where did this software come from, is the question. Where did the handwriting recognition software come from? A, it came to their senior programmer in a dream, but he was interrupted before he could write the whole thing down. B, it was delivered by an anonymous Russian programmer who came to an Apple exec's hotel at midnight, then disappeared forever. Or C, Steve Jobs was inspired to create it in order to decipher his own doctor's handwriting.
Definitely the first question.
The first one. It came to the senior program in a dream, but he was interrupted before he could write the whole thing down.
Yes.
You're very confident, but no, not in this case. You're not correct. It was, in fact, the anonymous Russian programmer.
Oh, wow.
According to the story, an Apple VP was in Moscow when he heard a frantic knocking on his door. He opened it to find a programmer who handed him a disk and then fled. That software became the basis for the Newton's handwriting recognition. True story.
Please, take this. It will bring your company to its knees. Bye.
Well, this is very exciting because you have one more question to go. If you get this right, you win it all. The last Newton, of course, Olivia Newton-John.
Whoa!
I'm guessing you might
know.
Wow,
I really thought we were going for Juice Newton.
Well, we thought of her. But do you know Olivia Newton-John?
I'm very sure well. Yes,
I might.
Do.
Well, then
is
you might know the answer.
Is she related to you before she married Mr. John?
No, she wasn't. No.
She's done a number of great duets in her career, including which of these just recently? A, she sang Summer Nights with one of the rescued Chilean miners. B, with Michelle Obama, she did Let's Get Physical in a PSA about exercise. Or C, she sang with Olivia Newton-san, the Japanese cross-dressing Olivia Newton-John impersonator.
Mrs. Obama.
You're going to go for Mrs. Obama?
I'm going to go for Mrs. Obama.
You think so?
I think so.
You sure about that?
I believe it's Mrs. Obama.
You really? You're going to go Mrs. Obama?
Yeah. Oh.
I don't know how to tell you this. It was A. It was with the Chilean miner. She just sang Summer Nights. This is the Chilean miner.
She didn't.
That's
Mr.
fantastic.
Pena. He's the guy who sang on Letterman.
Was this before or after?
No, this was just after.
Oh, I see.
She didn't go down in the mine. That would have been amazing if, like, they're down there and the rescue capsule appears and opens up and it's like, it's Olivia Newton-John. They sent her down here. That would have been great. But no, he's a big singer, and she was there doing a concert, and he came up, and they did Summer Nights together. It was apparently great.
That's odd, because all he met all summer were other miners.
That's true. That's a good point.
Same.
So, Carl, how did Wayne Newton end up doing in our quiz?
He needed at least two correct answers to win for Rebecca Bindel, but he had just one correct answer.
That's... the first time you have not succeeded in a Las Vegas stage.
Well, it's probably the first time that's been broadcast nationally.
Yeah, sure. Fair enough. Ladies and gentlemen, Wayne Newton is Mr. Las Vegas. Wayne Newton, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you.
In just a minute, Carl gives his roulette advice, always bet on rhyme. It's our listener limerick challenge. If you'd like to play, give us a call at 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. That's 1-888-924-8924. But right now, panel, some more questions for you from the week's news. Adam, Microsoft recently unveiled the Kinect controller for its Xbox game console. This thing is a camera. It tracks your body movement so you don't have to press buttons to control the game. Some privacy advocates, though, are worried that Microsoft might use it to watch you. Where did they get this idea?
I'd imagine from Microsoft.
Yes, Microsoft said they might. Last week at a developers conference, a Microsoft VP said the image recognition capabilities of the Kinect provided, quote, an interesting opportunity to target content to specific users. If you don't speak Microsoft, interesting is their word for terrifying. Say, it might see you in your living room wearing a New York Giants t-shirt, and it will send you an ad for more Giants stuff. It might see you eating an entire bag of Doritos, say, and send you an ad for sweatpants.
Wow.
After some outcry about the VP's remarks, Microsoft said it would never use the Kinect ever to violate anyone's privacy. In a carefully worded statement, it sent to everyone it saw reading the VP's remarks on their computers.
That is nefarious. That's scary.
We have reached a level of creepitude in our country now. There's nowhere you can go where you're not spied and peeked and
patted.
Prodded.
What the interesting opportunity there for the Kinect is to invent a game like Sim TSA.
So you stand there in your living room.
You stand there and just like, and it's just...
I'm just afraid that Bill Gates would all of a sudden, his voice will come out and say, stand up straighter. Sorry.
This place is a mess.
Yes, clean up. Hey, you going to finish that pizza?
What? Wait. Yeah, that's it. It's a final straw.
Paula, people say Hollywood is out of ideas. That's nonsense. According to Hollywood Insider, one movie studio is looking to produce a film based on what popular 80s phenomenon?
A film about... Gee, I have no idea.
I'll give you a hint. I'll try to do my best movie trailer voice. Here we go. In a world where squares on one side are not all the same color until you twist them.
Oh, Rubik's Cube!
Yes, there you are. Talent agency CAA just signed the Rubik's Cube as a client with the intent of turning it into a feature film.
Who could make a feature film about a Rubik's Cube?
Well, that's the question.
Come on, it's got a built-in plot.
What is the plot?
You got to match up the colors. It's the ticking clock everybody wants in a movie.
We've got to match up the colors before
the, I don't know, before the anything, before the bomb goes off, before, you know.
Well, the one storyline is like a thriller about a Rubik's Cube competition, but they could think further. From the producers of Yahtzee, Horseshoes, and Eat, Pray, Lego. A tragic love triangle of a Rubik's Cube caught between a light bright and an easy bake oven. Baking isn't the only thing that's easy.
You won't believe the final twist.
If this works, there will be more movies about inanimate objects that annoyed you the first time you saw them. In other words, Sex and the City 3.
Too soon.
Apparently. Faith, yeah. Christmas season is almost upon us. To get in the spirit, Harrods department store in Britain is offering $1 million what?
Back rub.
Ooh, you say that as if you're ready to pay that money. No. Something you can buy. It's a traditional Christmas thing, but this one costs $1 million.
Well, it's being England. Is it $1 million Christmas cracker?
No, it isn't. Okay. Did they pull? No. I'll give you a hint. Day one has a piece of chocolate and a gold wrapper. Day two has a piece of gold and a chocolate wrapper. Day one, day two.
You mean the 12 days of Christmas?
No.
What?
It's an object.
There's a movie.
Based on
Advent calendar. Yes, the Advent calendar. $1 million, this Advent calendar, will be the most expensive ever made, with second place being roughly $1 million less expensive.
I would say on day 25, Jesus Christ
exactly.
is in your home.
For that much money.
Yeah, wrapped in a gold blanket.
Big gifts like the speedboat will be represented by images, but smaller gifts like the $100,000 wristwatch are hidden behind the doors in the traditional way, except the doors will be opened by butlers.
We have a similar thing going on in California right now, but we are using an advent calendar this year with our budget. It's sort of the opposite of receiving a gift, which is that for each day, something else is ripped out.
We take something back.
Oh, look, day 24, no education.
Nah.
Yippee.
Yeah, the kids love it.
Coming up, it's Lightning Fill in the Blank, but first it's the game where you have to listen for the rhyme. If you'd like to play on air, call or leave a message at 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. That's 1-888-924-8924. You can click the Contact Us link at the website, waitwait.npr.org. There you can find out about attending our weekly live shows back at the Chase Bank Auditorium in Chicago. And you can check out our blog where we regularly sacrifice our own well-being for your amusement. Hi, you're on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hi, this is Jane from Denver, Colorado.
Hey, how are things in Denver?
Fabulous.
They are. You sound pretty mellow about it.
That was a long pause, Jane.
Yeah. She just had to take in the fabulousness of it. What do you do there?
I'm lucky enough to get to teach elementary school.
You do? You teach elementary school?
I do.
You seem very, very at peace with that, which surprises me.
Actually, I love my job.
That's great.
And they still have education in Colorado?
Unfortunately, they do. We haven't hit the 24th yet.
That's great. Jane, welcome to the show. Carl Castle is going to read you three news-related limericks with the last word or phrase missing from each. Your job, fill in that last word or phrase correctly. Do that, you'll be a winner. Ready? Here is your first limerick.
For many a bedbug extractor, feigned confidence is a big factor. I read my reviews and rehearse exit cues. I chase bugs, but I'm really an
actor.
Yes. Two things New York City has no shortage of. One, out-of-work actors. Two, bedbugs. One savvy entrepreneur has decided to employ one to exterminate the other. And no, the bedbugs are not being sent after the actors. Bed Bug Busters of New York is staffed by about a dozen struggling actors and theater people. One employee who doesn't play an exterminator on TV, but is one in real life, says her actor training definitely helps. How?
I do not think you should be mixing bed bugs with actors. Because if you don't get all those bed bugs, then, I mean, not only are you going to get bitten in your apartment, but you're going to find tiny little leaflets for their one bug shows.
That's true. they're going to leave their little headshots.
Yeah.
Here is your next limerick.
I'd eat escargots by the pail, but their shells leave a hot vapor trail. I'm starting to sputter from hot garlic butter. I ate a combustible
snail.
Yes, snail. Very good. Until now, the worst thing that could happen to you while eating escargot was the sudden realization that it is a snail. But not so for two California men who suffered the ultimate indignity of exploding escargot. That's right, they had exploded, squirting, quote, hot garlic butter on their faces and polo shirts. The two men filed a complaint against the restaurant, and the two snails have been given a hero's burial. Here is your last limerick.
Of our incense, sometimes the effects are missed. So we'll break out the prayer beads and flex our wrists. We priests get disheveled from wrestling with devils. We'll just have to train some more.
Oh, could you repeat it?
Mm-hmm. Of our incense, sometimes the effects are missed. So we'll break out the prayer beads and flex our wrists. We priests get disheveled from wrestling with devils. We'll just have to train some more.
I don't know.
It's a tricky one. It rhymes with effexormist, flexorists.
I really don't know.
How about exorcists?
Oh, duh.
Demonic possessions are apparently on the rise, and exorcists cannot meet the demand. So more than 50 bishops and 60 priests signed up for a two-day training session in Baltimore to learn exorcism skills, including evaluating whether a person is indeed possessed. For example, head spinning around, demon haunted, or just an owl? Projectile vomiting, work of Satan or Taco Bell? Potty mouth, the devil or kids nowadays? Carl, how did Jane do in our quiz?
Jane did well enough to win, Peter. She had two correct answers, so Jane, you win our prize.
Well done. Thank you so much for playing.
No, thanks for having me.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
You're the devil in the sky. Heaven help me, I didn't see the devil in your eyes.
Now on to our final game, Lightning Fill in the Blank. Each of our players will have 60 seconds in which to answer as many fill-in-the-blank questions as he or she can. Each correct answer now worth 2 points. Carl, can you give us the scores?
We have a tie for first place, Peter. Adam Felber and Faith Saley both have 3 points. Paula Poundstone has 2.
All right. So, Paula, you are in third place. You're up first. The clock will start when I begin.
You know, I don't think you need to say that I'm in third place.
All right.
No, I think we all need to say it together.
No, I think our friend Carl gave us enough information to figure out that I'm in third place.
All right, Paula, for reasons I won't mention because third of place. Your sensitivity.
Paula, third place Poundstone at your service.
The clock will start, Paula, when I begin your first question, fill in the blank. The House Ethics Committee voted to convict New York Representative Blank of 11 ethics violations.
Charlie Rangel.
Right. Staff Sergeant Salvatore Junta became the first living service member to receive the blank since the Vietnam War.
Medal of Honor.
Right. House and Senate Republicans joined to institute a ban on blank in the new Congress.
Earmarks.
Right. According to the new Oxford American Dictionary, the 2010 word of the year is blank.
Teabagger.
No, it's actually refudiate. Fans flock to get tickets to midnight showings of the first part of the final installment of the blank series.
The Harry Potter
series. Right, for the first time since they went bankrupt last June, shares of stock for automobile manufacturer Blank were available for trading.
I don't know. Is it
GM,
not GM?
It's GM.
Oh, geez.
A Russian woman.
Wait, aren't we all part owners in GM?
Yes. Not anymore.
Yeah, well, then they have to ask.
A Russian woman tried to stop her daughter from flying to Morocco and getting married by blanking.
By marrying the guy first.
No, by telling airline authorities her daughter was a terrorist. Not content with waiting until the does-anyone-object part of the ceremony, the 56-year-old mother did what any loving and flat-out crazy mother would do. She called up airline officials, told them her daughter was plotting to blow up the plane. Finally released from confinement, the bride rushed to Morocco to tell the groom, I can't wait for you to meet my mom. You're gonna love her. Carl, how did Paula do?
Paula had 4 correct answers for 8 more points. Paula now has 10 points and the lead.
Thank you, Carl.
2-4. We flipped a coin. Adam has elected to go second, so you're up next. Fill in the blank. Jurors in New York City voted guilty on only one of the over 280 charges against the first detainee from blank.
Guantanamo Bay.
Right. Apple's big announcement this week was that iTunes would finally be offering songs from blank.
The Beatles.
Right. Touted as a Gmail killer, the new messaging system on blank was unveiled this week.
Facebook.
Right. On Thursday, Senate Majority Leader Harry Reid said he would push to ratify the START nuclear arms treaty with blank this year.
Russia.
Right. After their defeat in the Asian Games, the Yemen beach volleyball team blamed their loss on blank.
The UAE.
The bikini-clad cheerleaders. Written before he took office, the picture book of The I Sing by Blank came out this week.
Barack Obama.
Right. People magazine announced Wednesday that the year's sexiest man alive is blank.
Ryan Reynolds.
Right. Robbed again. Police investigating a suspicious package left on an Ohio man's front porch discovered it was a blank.
It was a box full of suspicion.
No, it was a package the man had ordered from Amazon. The Ohio man noticed a suspicious man in brown pants leaving a package on his front short. So he immediately called police, fearing the worst. The responding investigator carefully examined the box and then asked the man, "Did you recently order anything from Amazon.com?" To which the man replied, "Why, yes, I did." Why do you ask? Carl, how did Adam do?
Adam had 6 correct answers for 12 more points. He now has 15 points, and Adam has the lead.
All right, Faith. How many, then, does Faith need to win?
6 to tie, 7 to win outright.
All right.
I'll get 6, would you?
Here we go, Faith. On Thursday, congressional Democrats said they would vote to extend Bush-era blanks for the lower and middle classes only.
Tax cuts.
Right. House GOP members blocked a bill on Thursday to extend blank benefits.
Medicare, Social Security.
Unemployed. Health experts warned that the cholera epidemic in blank is likely to spread. Yes, saying they are unsafe, the FDA said that 7 blanks that contain alcohol can't stay on the market in their current form.
Energy drinks.
Yes. Operator Mary Klingman from the Butterball Turkey Hotline says the weirdest question she's gotten at Thanksgiving is blank.
Can I cook the turkey alive?
No. Can you serve turkey over cat litter? On Thursday, the House decided not to vote on a Republican proposal to eliminate funding for blank.
The House decided not to vote on a
Republican proposal to eliminate funding for blank.
Turkeys.
NPR.
Oh!
Seattle Mariner Felix Hernandez won his first American League blank award this year.
Seattle Mariner?
Yes.
Baseball Hall of Fame?
No, Cy Young Award. Scientists in Japan have created the strain of bacteria that they say can blank.
Cure Visal sucked.
No. Tragically, no. There's no cure. No, they've created a strain of bacteria that they say can solve Sudoku puzzles. By reprogramming the bacteria's DNA, scientists made the bacteria express different colors, and through a complex communication process, they solved the puzzle. Moments afterward, the bacteria said, well, that was kind of pointless. Do you have something fun to do, like a crossword, maybe a word jumble? What do you got?
I think I know the plot of the Rubik's Cube movie.
Yeah. Carl, did Faith do well enough to win?
She needed at least 6 correct answers to tie.
Oh, my gosh.
Faith had only 3 correct answers.
Oh, Faith.
15 points. Wow. Adam Felber is this week's champion.
Yeah, well done.
Thank you, Las Vegas.
Nice.
In just a minute, we'll ask our panelists the best wedding gift Prince William and Kate Middleton will get. But first, let me tell you that support for NPR comes from NPR stations and Subaru, where all vehicles are built in zero landfill plants. Love, it's what makes a Subaru a Subaru. The Overbook Foundation, supporting CatalogChoice.org, a nonprofit service that allows customers to decide which catalogs to receive in the mail. And the John D. and Catherine D. MacArthur Foundation, committed to building a more just, verdant, and peaceful world. More information at MacFound.org. Wait, Don't Tell Me is a production of NPR and WBEZ Chicago, in association with Urgent Haircut Productions. Doug Berman, executive producer. Philip Godekin writes our limericks. Our house manager is Don Hall. Our intern is Blythe Haga. Our web guru, Beth Novi. Special thanks this week to Debbie Munch and Hannah Allen at the Paris Casino and the staff of KNPR. We are in Las Vegas. BJ Lederman composed our theme. Our program is produced by Ian Chillog, Eva Waltover, and Emily Ecton. Technical direction from Robert Newhouse and Lorna White. The senior producer of Wait, Don't Tell Me is Michael Danforth. Now, panel, what would be the best present at the royal wedding? Faith Saley.
Will's last name is Windsor. Kate's is Middleton. So in a nod to tough economic times, the gift will be monogrammed towels that can be hung right side up or upside down.
Clever. Adam Felber.
From Prince Harry, matching his and hers armbands.
Hey, and Paula Poundstone.
Carl Castle's voice on their castle answering machine.
Well, if they get any of that panel, we'll ask you about it on Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Thank you so much, Carl Castle. Thanks also to Faith Saley, Adam Felber, Paula Poundstone. Thanks to our fabulous audience here at the Paris Casino in Las Vegas, Nevada. I am Peter Sagal, and we will see you next week. This is NPR.